Authors Over 50, Writing in Life's Sweetest Third. Authors Over 50's weekly podcast celebrates writers and their journeys to publication. Writing after 50 is a whole story on its own, so let's skip to Life's Sweetest Third and talk with authors about their journey from pen to publish. Welcome, I'm Julia Daly, your host, and I invite you to listen to interviews with writers who've achieved their goal of publishing a book just later in life. We've seen award lists for under 30 or under 40, but I've yet to see lists for those who've achieved a significant milestone of their own, launching a new career and publishing their first book after the age of 50. We will hear about these authors' inspirations, struggles, strategies, and the smell of that first book. These writers' journeys inspire me because I'm one of them. My guest today is a former attorney who earned her MFA in creative nonfiction from St. Mary's College of California in 2020. A native of the Bay Area, she turned to writing after George, her husband and partner of more than three decades, died of cancer, and she found herself single and living alone for the first time in her life. Her essays have been published in the New York Times Modern Love column, HuffPost, Woman's Day, Good Housekeeping, Elle Decor, and Reader's Digest, among other publications. Her award-winning blog, thehungoverwidow.com, dispenses empathy and advice on grief and dating after loss. Welcome to Authors Over 50, Debbie Weiss.
Hi, Julia. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Debbie, our opening question on Authors Over 50 is always, so what took you so long to write your first book?
Well, my original career was practicing law, so that took a while. But I really didn't have that much I wanted to write about until my husband passed. And it wasn't until I was trying to navigate life after widowhood that I felt that I had something that I could share that might help other people, especially other widows.
Well, losing a spouse is one of the greatest stresses of our life. Tell us how you used writing as a vehicle for your grief.
Well, I retired from practicing law when I was about 40, and I was taking some writing classes and writing a little bit here or there and really enjoying the weekly class I took at a local senior center. But after my husband passed, I had so many impressions and things going on in my mind, and it helped to start writing. And from there, I wanted to write better. So that began a whole process, which led to the book.
Well, once you knew you had to write this book, how did you proceed? Did you search for an agent, decide to use a hybrid small press, or did you self-publish?
Well, I wound up with a hybrid. She Writes Press, an award-winning hybrid publisher for women authors. But originally, I just started writing vignettes and then started to put them together and then got an editor. And then much, much later, after the MFA, looked for a publisher.
Well, there's so many books. Tell us what makes yours different.
It's funny. I don't think people normally think of grief accounts as being humorous, but my book picks up where I've been widowed for about 14 months and I start dating again. And it was really eye-opening. It was actually pretty funny. I mean, some of the things I've been through as a widow are really pretty darkly funny and absurd. And I wanted to show how crazy it all is. And also, again, pretty darkly humorous, unfortunately. I joke that I wrote my book because I wanted to inform current single midlife women about the poor quality of middle-aged men these days.
Well, I'm not single right now, but I have been, and I agree with you for sure. What is your writing routine? Are you a morning person or a night person?
When I write, and it hasn't been for a while lately, I wake up around 4 a.m. and write in bed until late morning, early afternoon. So a good day, a good writing day means I'm laying in bed most of the day.
Well, that sounds good to me. I haven't heard anybody with that routine, but that sounds like a good one.
It works for me. It works for me straight just to wake up in the morning and just write. That's the only way I got the Modern Love column. I mean, I wrote it about 4 a.m. in the morning up until about 10 a.m. in the morning. It took a really long time and I wasn't getting much else done, but that's the only way I can really work at my best.
Tell us more about that column.
Oh, well, that was a dream of mine. It was about 4.5 years ago. It was March of, 2018, I guess it came out. Oddly enough, it came out around the same date as my wedding anniversary with my late husband. So that seemed like a very interesting sign. And I wrote it about when I was dating a polyamorous tantric sex instructor who lived in San Francisco. He was, I know, crazy. He was originally a doctor. And sadly enough, he was also a terrible mansplainer. And I think I was so disgusted in general by having been patronized when I was dating. I mean, I'm a midlife woman. I'm a widow. I'm a homeowner. And I kind of found men so patronizing. I think that's what led me to write that piece.
Wow. Are you able to, do you have to disguise these dates that you go on? How do you describe them in your book without getting into any legal difficulties, even though you're an attorney?
Well, my book is creative nonfiction and I couldn't for the Modern Love column, but in the book I changed the names. And otherwise there's nothing defamatory. It's a work of creative nonfiction. So I think I'm pretty safe.
Well, it sounds so very interesting. Tell us more about your publishing journey. Were there challenges? Have you been doing any publicity efforts for the book? Tell us what works, what you think maybe works or doesn't work.
Well, my publishing journey has been difficult. I used my book for my MFA thesis. And I really had wanted traditional publishing and an agent. The pandemic hit for my final semester, my fourth semester. It was a two-year class. So things were kind of shut down. I didn't have much luck getting an agent. I didn't get one. It was actually pretty painful. I mean, I remember waking up for my birthday on a vacation in an isolated place in Santa Cruz and getting a rejection from an agency that specializes in memoir and just thinking, okay, this sucks. I mean, this isn't any fun. And I sent the book to She Writes to see what they thought of it. I'd used a best-selling author as an editor, and she felt the book had promise. And She Writes said, we'll take it. We think it's ready to rock. Less than 7% of the books that are submitted to us, we believe, are prepared to go, but yours is. So I signed on with She Writes, and they created a beautiful book with me. So that was good.
Well, they're very well respected in the industry, and they create such a community of women. So I love that about them.
Yeah, I like that very much too. It's very educational. Trying to promote a book has been a real learning curve that I probably have not yet mastered.
Well, I hope you're not still having such difficulty in the dating pool. I understand from friends who had wonderful marriages and the loss of a spouse that it's very difficult to get back in. But people who have wonderful relationships expect another wonderful relationship. Has that been the case for you?
Yes, that was very difficult because I was with my husband for 32 years. And if he hadn't died, we would still be together. Our marriage wasn't perfect, which I go through in the book. He was my high school sweetheart. And he sort of took the lead in our lives. He was 4 years older. But at the same time, I really believed in love and in long-term commitment. And I met so many people, men particularly, who were just so cynical and living in the past. And I was treated to so much vitriol about exes and reduced finances. And it really seemed to be such a depressed and depressing dating pool. I did find love. I've been with my current partner for 4 years. We met online and recently moved in together.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. So there is hope, everyone out there. There is hope.
There is hope. It just takes a really long time and a lot of persistence. People say it's a numbers game, and I tend to agree with that, that you just have to kind of go through a lot of people. But what also helped me, though not necessarily to find my person, was just engaging in activities I enjoyed. I'm a big hiker. And I found, for example, the pool of guys who hiked was far, far better than the pool of guys online.
Yes, I agree with that. Activity, sports, get out there. My husband's a pilot and he says, go to the airport. There are great men out there who are pilots.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about your book and then read from it so that we can hear your tone and voice in the book.
Okay. Well, my book, which I'm going to read from the first chapter, begins with my filling out a dating profile. And it goes through bad dates, but it's also about trying to create a new life after being widowed. My late husband and I were very isolated. We were both introverts. He was an engineer's engineer. He was a tech guy. After retiring from law, I was very happy as a bookworm who gardened. So it was hard for me to kind of go out in the world. And I'm a very cautious person. My mom died when I was 10. So I tended to be very, very cautious. And it was interesting trying to create a life when I am so extremely cautious. So I feel like the book is for people like me who have found themselves on their own at midlife and are trying to get out in the world and trying to make connection, but also have their own reservations and limitations, as we all do, hence the name of the book, Available As Is.
I love the title.
Thank you. My publisher came up with it. So this is from my first chapter called Marital Status Widowed. This is from chapter one at the beginning. It's 4 a.m. and I'm putting together my profile for JDate, the self-proclaimed largest Jewish dating community worldwide. My husband, George, died 14 months ago. George was my high school sweetheart, the strong man I curled up next to each night for 32 years. Now that George is gone, I don't know who I am anymore. I've lost the me that I was when I was married, but I've got to come up with something to tell strange men. This is what I put on my dating profile. I'm a former attorney, currently writing a book, and gardening when I get writer's block. I am fun, witty, and outgoing, but occasionally shy, irreverent but kind, poised but occasionally awkward, with a wry sense of humor. I can talk about almost anything, and am not so secretly anymore an 80s freak. I'm always hearing about online scams, so best to put right up front that I'm a lawyer. Never mind that I haven't practiced in 11 years. Saying I'm a lawyer will probably turn off some people because lawyers are widely regarded as jerks. I know I was a jerk when I was a practicing lawyer. Now that I don't work anymore, my days are pretty mellow. Walking a nearby trail, taking a yoga class, writing in my journal, and planting a few Nandina shrubs in my yard. I still talk to George. During this morning's walk on the tree-lined trail that runs through town, I was overcome by the different shades of green, shimmering and verdant, pierced with red bottle brush and orange poppies. Afterward, in my garden, the arcing sprigs of my new plants with their neat oval leaves seemed so fragile. George, I'm sending them love, hoping they'll take to their new home, hoping that somehow my love will reach you as well. Maybe things look more intensely beautiful because even in a world without you, I still want to live. Of course, I don't put any of that in my profile. I don't want potential dates to know that I still chat with my late husband. At least I no longer expect him to answer back, and that's progress. I know I'm alone and it terrifies me, but I'd better leave that out too. I worry I'll sound terribly retro as I search for a man in an age when so many women have chosen to be single. And having spent over 10 years working with male lawyers, I can see why. The profile questionnaire looms. I try to imagine the prospect of having sex with a new man. Failing that, I try to visualize going out with him for a nice dinner. Failing that, I go to the kitchen to get a dark chocolate truffle. Me, 50 years old, a terrible age to be newly single, 5'9", athletic build, green eyes, red hair, originally brunette, but I have a great colorist, and deeply insecure. Location, Danville, California. Danville is an overpriced suburb 40 minutes southeast of San Francisco. But in 1970, when I first met George at his parents' pool party, it was all walnut trees and rolling hills dotted with ranch houses, just like Walnut Creek, where George lived 10 minutes away. My dad and his mom worked together as nuclear physicists. Our moms cooked and decorated their homes out of Sunset, a lifestyle magazine offering the best of the West, which seemed to involve miniature cactus gardens and dips made with mayonnaise and those tiny pre-cooked shrimp. George's first words to me were, "Do you want to see my model train set?"
That's great. That's a wonderful, wonderful section.
Thank you.
I can't wait to buy the book for a friend of mine who just became a widow herself.
I'm so sorry. There are so many of us widows. I think maybe we want to be able to talk about our feelings.
And I'm sure they're all as different as every woman out there.
They are. I've spoken to a lot of widows. I'm doing some podcasts that are aimed at widows, and all of our experiences are very different. But I think there are some commonalities sometimes in terms of loneliness and just the abrupt, abrupt change in life from going to having someone to have dinner with every night, to have someone to say every day, "How is your day?" to being alone. I think there are some commonalities there that are painful, at least for those of us who were more or less happily married.
Sure. Was there anything, Debbie, that you edited out of your book that you just couldn't put in the book?
That's a good question. I'm pretty open. What happened for me more was that I had omissions in the book and had to add things that I felt kind of shy about adding. Like the first time I was with a man after I lost my husband, I was very, very hesitant to put that in. Some things were difficult there. Dealing with issues concerning George's parents, I had to tread very carefully. So I pretty much have everything in there. It was just a matter of putting it in layers.
Did you have to do any kind of research as you went along, or was everything strictly, you know, from your own life?
Everything is pretty much my own life. I mean, that's pretty much it. And I just worked with the best of my recollection. The kinds of research I did was looking at, like, if a song or something came up from the 80s, I would make sure, hopefully, that I wasn't getting in too many anachronisms and things out of sequence because, you know, I was writing back to a long time ago. So that was a bit of research. The book focuses a lot on Grief and Grieving by David Kessler and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. So I was going through that to get the quotes right, and a little bit by Hope Edelman's Motherless Daughters. I had permission to use those pieces, and some she writes helped me with that. So it wasn't a lot of research, but it was generally fact-checking, looking back, talking to my dad, you know, my stepmom, see what their impressions were.
Yes, yeah, sometimes when you write memoirs, I think the families are afraid of what's going to be in there.
Yeah, my family's great, and I think I was pretty balanced. There are no villains in my book. Nobody really did anything wrong. It was just an extremely difficult situation.
Do you have another book in you, or are you just going to continue your blog?
Actually, I stopped blogging a while ago. All my blog posts are on my author website, thehungoverwidow.com. I don't have another book in me at this point. And to be honest, I don't know that I would ever promote another book. It's a very difficult thing to do in this world. It's an extremely crowded pool of writers. I think it's very, very hard as a new author. I mean, I really appreciate an opportunity like this, but to make a book, put it out there and have it be cost effective is extremely difficult right now.
It really is. Are there any marketing or publicity things that you've done that you think will be worthwhile?
Well, I've reached out to a lot of podcasts like yours, so I'm doing a lot of those. For me, it's reaching out to widow podcasts and hopefully some publications that talk about widowhood. And then trying to focus on a few, some midlife things. There's also a lot of podcasts and their publications for women at midlife who are trying to get unstuck, move on with their life and be inspired. So that's another market.
What do you think was the best money that you spent as a writer?
Well, the best money I spent probably was getting my MFA at St. Mary's, because that was just a wonderful experience. It was cool to go back to school and have all different viewpoints and people. And that was not only towards writing the book, but that was just towards having a more interesting life.
Do you believe in writer's block? Have you ever experienced that?
I have it now. Yes, I have writer's block now. Aside from newsletters and all, yes, I do believe people get writer's block. I saw it happen in my MFA classes. I mean, we had deadlines. We had pretty harsh deadlines and page limits, and sometimes people just couldn't do it because it's very hard to be creative on demand. Yeah, I would say I probably have writer's block now. Every day I think, you need to pitch, you need to pitch, you need to submit. And that just seems to kind of throw me into a quandary.
Do you think writing energizes you or exhausts you?
I hate to say that it has exhausted me on occasion, but when it's fun, it energizes me. I've written for publications on Medium before, and you get a lot of interaction and a lot of other cool writers there, and that's kind of energizing. I feel that the connections can be energizing, and writing in itself can be a pleasure or just something you feel that you have to do. I've taught writing classes and love that. That's another piece of the writing puzzle that I've just really enjoyed.
Well, you have such a beautiful area to hike. You know, the only thing that really helps me with writer's block is to get out and exercise and ride my bike, listen to somebody else's voice in my ear, whether it's a podcast or a book on audio book, you know, and that sometimes will just trigger a childhood memory or something that will get me interested in putting it down on paper again.
Walking for me really helps. I moved last year to Benicia, California, and it's on a bay, it's a water. So walking by the water to me is just wonderful.
Yeah. I think water anywhere is inspiring and comforting and relaxing.
I agree. There's just something that happens to your brain. I started swimming this past year, and that's super energizing. You know, I can do a hard yoga class and at the end I'm sort of wrung out, but after swimming, I still really, really energized.
Yes. And I think writing is like swimming. I think we can do it the rest of our lives because I'm interviewing people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s who are still writing beautiful work.
I think that's wonderful. You can. You definitely can. I taught a writing class for senior citizens and they're amazing writers. And these are women who'd never written before. And they're really talented and have wonderful things to talk about in different periods of time. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, they say that we baby boomers are never going to stop working. And so I have to believe that this is life's sweetest third.
I believe it is. I believe it is in a lot of ways. I mean, I think we're more secure. Our lives can be more settled in some ways, or we're willing to take different kinds of risks. I know I see a lot of the older folks in my hiking groups who are traveling and taking really long, interesting hikes and just kind of doing what they always wanted to do. And now they have the freedom to do that. I think we're freer now and we care less what people think.
That's exactly right. And our grandchildren, we can love them and send them home. We don't have to keep them in our houses as teenagers.
Yeah, I don't have any kids, so that's different for me.
Well, our pets now are our children at home, and sometimes they're like toddlers too.
Yeah, Benicia's super, super dog friendly, and I was walking today, and you know, I saw several people with their dogs in their strollers. And finally, I was surprised to see a baby in a stroller instead. You know?
Well, Debbie, our last interview question is always about writers over 50. Do you have any advice for writers 50 and above?
I do. I think that writing can be super enjoyable, and it also helps to clear your head. You can get ideas out on paper. So maybe the best thing to do is don't have any fear. You just start writing. It's wonderful to get in a writer's group. I've been in a group with some older folks, people in their 70s, and they're putting out beautiful work, and it gives you accountability. The book that I've taught from, which I love, is it's called Shimmering Images. I believe it's Lisa Dale Norton. And she talks about writing just a vignette, a memory. And you don't have to think about being published. I taught a class for older seniors, and I called it for seniors, and I called it Sharing Our Stories. And it's really just stuff to pass down to your family. So I think if you take out the intimidation factor and try to put in the pleasure factor, it's just a wonderful thing to do.
Well, I think that's great advice for those of us 50 and above, and even young people to write down their impressions. I wish I had kept all of the stories I had written as a child. So I think anytime we can journal or keep something to pass along, it's just part of our legacy here.
Yeah, I wish I was writing when I was younger as well. Same with exercising. You know, I went through law school just majorly stressed, and I think I should have been writing. And I would have loved to see my impressions of being married with my husband when everything was actually happening contemporaneously, as opposed to sort of trying to recreate it over 30 years later.
Exactly right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate your perspective and your wonderful memoir. And I'm sure it's going to bring a lot of comfort to a lot of the widows out there. And I can't wait to read it. And we're happy to say that you're now one of our authors over 50.
Well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us today. Please look for Authors Over 50 every Thursday, when we will have conversations with accomplished debut novelists over the age of 50. Please subscribe and share with a friend. And check out my own publication journey after 50 at www.juliadaily, that's D-A-I-L-Y, like daily newspaper.com. Until next time, keep reading and writing. And remember, it's never too late to fulfill a dream in life's sweetest third.